step into the world of power, loyalty, and luck.
I'm going to make him an offer he can't refuse.
With family, cannolis, and spins mean everything.
Now, you want to get mixed up in the family business.
Introducing The Godfather at ChumbaCasino.com. Test your luck in the shadowy world of The Godfather slot.
Someday, I will call upon you to do a service for me.
Play The Godfather, now at ChumbaCasino.com.
Welcome to the family.
VGW Group, no purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions, 18 plus.
Clay, when you get a rhythm, you start feeling, hey, I can hit anything.
Yeah, it's best feeling as a two guard and as a shooter. And it felt great to have a night like that. Hopefully have many more, but
did it feel like 40?
Yep.
We're gonna bring y'all into our huddle.
Today's Thursday, January 8th, 2015, and you are in the Warriors Huddle with me, Bram, and with me as always, my boy and producer Scott.
Scott here.
And joining us for the second time, ESPN's All Things Warriors expert, Ethan Sherwood Strauss. What's going on, Ethan?
Nothing much, man. I just hope that we destroyed all of the audio from the last time that we talked, when just everything we said about Klay Thompson, everything I said about the Kevin Love trade, can we make sure to just throw that into some vat of lava? Could you do me that favor?
You know, did I say this is you returning to the huddle? Because this is the first time you've ever been on, man. I don't remember what you're talking about. And if we did say anything, I remember you saying that Klay was much better than Love. So, in fact, congratulations on calling it right, man.
Yeah. Remember that hot take I had? I said, I'm going to tell you something. I expect Maurice Spates to be good. And I'll tell you one other thing. I expect Draymond Green to be even better than Kevin Love next season. Yeah, that was bold by me. And really, I don't get the credit I deserve for calling it like I see it.
You know, I remember that. I also remember you saying, you know, Justin Holiday is going to make a huge impact off the bench. I was surprised. I didn't even know who the hell it was. So nicely played.
Yeah. I mean, that showed some incredible foresight by me, you know, and hey, what can I say? Yeah. I watch the team a lot. It's almost like I'm psychic.
Talking about totally unpredictable things, Ethan, we're currently living in a world where the Warriors might be considered the title favorites. You know, as a guy who literally suffered through the brunt of the Kohan era, how are you dealing with this? You know, what's your approach to this entire new success?
It's hard to adjust. It's like your palms are out and the slot machine just keeps spitting quarters out, and you just keep thinking it's going to stop, but it never stops. It just keeps raining quarters. Hey, I'm enjoying the hell out of it, not just from a fan perspective, from enjoying the games, but from a work perspective. I like dealing with this group a lot better than last season. Last year, Mark's assistants were not allowed to talk to the media. Sure. This year, you can talk to anybody, and you actually learn about the team. And I love it right now. This is the most fun I've had at work in a long time.
Are you attributing that big change to the coaching change? Is it Kerr's regime that's allowing you that access, or are we just looking at a new era because of the success?
Well, to be clear, a lot of coaches have that rule that assistants aren't allowed to talk to media. They all want to stand with one message or whatever stupid cliche they might put in there. And I get that. You don't want backbiting. You don't want a mixed message. And so I understand that. I'm not insulting Jackson's regime to say that they didn't do it.
Sure.
But look, it's an improvement as far as the communication goes, and just as far as how much insight you can get into what the team is doing. If you listen to Kerr's post-game presser from the Pacer game, I was asking him some questions about what they were struggling to get over against the Pacers, and he got into specifics about tactics and really unpacked it in a way that you just don't see that often. So I really would enjoy that, I believe, regardless of whether or not they're winning. But the actual basketball they're playing is also just fantastic. It's not only great basketball, but it's aesthetically great basketball. The defense is swarming, and then they have the fastest pace in the league. It instantly turns into offense on the other end. Hey, I know I sound like a homer, but what can you do? This is just great basketball, and it's great to watch.
Hell yes. Let me start with a resentful comment. Do you know how jealous I am that you can casually throw out there? So when I was talking to him at the presser the other day,
that's so glamorous.
It is glamorous.
You know, the unwashed media masses trying to interrupt each other to get a question in.
I'm impressed nonetheless, but let me put it a different way. Now that the Warriors are the NBA's darling, at least right now, you know, I mean, it seems like everyone's really paying attention to us. Are you the cool kid on the block at ESPN? I mean, are people asking you to do more? Are they coming to you and asking about the team? Has this changed anything for you?
I think there's an expectation that I should do more. It's hard to know what exactly people want. I have something coming out that I'm really excited about, but I don't know if it's what people want necessarily. It's six Klay Thompson moves that he's just added this season that's just new. And to me, that's very exciting and very interesting. And I have quotes from him on what he's doing. I think that's great, but that might not be the type of thing that's wanted right now. People might want more of the human interest story, the background, and a lot of those biographical details. And so I'm not comfortable doing that necessarily, but I feel like there's a hunger for it. So I'm just trying to adjust, and I'm just trying to figure out how more acclaim for the team and national attention alters my job. And in the meantime, I just try to watch as much of the team as I can and watch every game at least twice as I just dog paddle being lost, just trying to collect information.
Give us a sneak peek. What's one of those moves that he's added?
Well, one of them, you probably have noticed this one. He will plant his pivot foot and do a 360-degree turn for what looks like absolutely no reason, but it works, especially when he runs his guy into a screener doing that. He just plants his pivot foot at the top of the key and literally does a 360. Just, I would be dizzy if I did it, but it somehow works for him as a drive. That's totally new. I could probably throw a few more out there. We're going to have GIFs so people can actually see what it is, because to me, we can talk about numbers and how he's improved numerically and his PER is higher and his win shares are better, and we can say all that, but I'd rather I want to give a visual representation of what improvement looks like.
No doubt. I saw you tweeting about this, and I was fired up about it. I mean, for what it's worth, I'm certainly not speaking for everybody, but I loved the idea of not only being able to watch him do these moves, but as if I was reading the tweet right, you're going to have him explain how he developed it and you know how it's working for him. Yeah.
Yeah, that's the goal. And what I'm learning from it, it's very interesting to me. What you'll see is that he's picking up things that Steph does. And so that really screws with your sense of what's valuable in a basketball team and how these guys aren't just a bunch of numbers jumbled together. They can actually learn from each other, and success perpetuates.
Yeah.
He's not just doing these things in a vacuum. He's doing the side step three-pointer. That's another one that I added, the side step, if you will. We've all noticed that Steph Curry does that pump fake. The guy flies by, and he doesn't step in like so many other people do in the NBA. He steps to the side, so he's still behind the three-point line. Klay didn't do that till this season. He's picked that up from Steph. So that process of how somebody learns and how they progress and how they become better, that to me is very interesting. Then again, the piece drops tomorrow. Maybe nobody cares. No clue.
Yeah. Well, I will be definitely tuning in to read that. How many of those moves did he learn from anyone on the USA basketball team this summer?
And I'll also give Scotty a little bit of it'll be tough to tune in and read it, but it is what it is. Go ahead, man.
That's a great question. I didn't mean to say actually like I was surprised. No, it's just a great question. Yes, he did. And that guy, you probably can't guess who he is because he didn't make the final. No, he did make the final cut. Right? Kyle Korver, right?
You,
Boogie Cousins.
Miles
Kyle Korver. Was Kyle Korver on the final cut? I should know that. I just didn't see a whole lot of him. I certainly saw him in the exhibition games. But nevertheless, Klay, if you've noticed, it's hard to notice. And I wish I could have asked Bogut about it. I didn't get a chance. I got held up today. It was the last thing I wanted to do. I wanted to ask Bogut how he feels about it. But Klay will grab on to Andrew Bogut and just use him just for leverage to sort of spin around and slingshot his way around a screen and just use him as an object, like a fireman grabbing a pole, essentially. And that's effective. And so if Steph does that too, they pick that up from Kyle Korver, at least according to Klay today when I asked him about it. So yes, there is something that they can learn from each other and from the better coaching and the other players. I just wouldn't have expected that Kyle Korver would be that guy, but hey, Kyle Korver's killing it out there in Atlanta. He's a pretty good guy to learn from.
Anyone who looks like Ashton Kutcher obviously has a series of good moves. And we also saw that slingshot thing you were talking about last night on that backdoor pass that Bogut gave to Klay. So I think I know exactly what you're talking about. It seems
good
like
recall.
You are developing a really solid relationship with Klay, man. I know you just came out with an interview and an article that appeared up on ESPN where you're asking him a couple of questions. And actually, perfect transition. I thought you had some great back and forth. Let me run a couple of them by you, man, because I got some follow-ups. Oh, yeah. Here's one that really struck me because of how candid you got him to be. So here's the quick back and forth, and I've edited it down just for time purposes. Here's your question. Question. You feel like you validated the choice on you or Kevin Love. Don't be politically correct. Here's his answer. I won't be politically correct. Shoot, I knew if I got traded, I was like, oh, well, I'm going to prove him wrong. That's my attitude. I knew how good we could be, man. Why would you want to mess up the best backcourt in the league? I knew my worth. I knew I could be one of the best two guards in the league. I'm not going to be bashful about it anymore. Let me start by giving you credit. You got this guy to be something that a lot of athletes aren't easily, and that's forthcoming and honest. And you seem to do it in kind of a comfortable, easy manner, like you guys are grabbing a drink while having this interview. What was the key? How did you get this guy to open up?
And don't be politically correct.
Don't be politically correct. Well, there's a lot of that interview that's edited out, which is just getting to that point, because at the beginning of a lot of conversations, it's not that comfortable.
Well, and before you even go into that, reset us. I mean, where is this interview happening? And are you guys on the basketball court? Are you guys in a car? Like, give us the background.
This is in Talbot's in San Mateo, the great old school toy store. Oh, my God. Fantastic old school toy store. He was doing a toy drive where I'm sure his people would rather that the article had been all about this, because he was doing fantastic charity work, and I'm sure that's the thing that they would want to get attention, but it was one of those, he's got availability there. And so it was in the upper room above, kind of the stock room above the toy store. And, you know, at the beginning of it, actually, when I was asking him about some of the charity work and everything else, there wasn't much eye contact. And, you know, I feel like Clay, he stomachs the media stuff. I've always respected that about him, and I'll tell you why. Because there are players who don't like to deal with media, but then they get mad at media for whatever's said.
Yeah.
Clay doesn't care. I respect that. You know, that's almost all I ask. It's like, if you don't care about talking to the media, if that's the last thing you want to do, cool, then just don't get mad when it's something you don't like to use a double negative.
Sure.
I know that Clay's legit. He just doesn't care. He's got his Xbox, he's got his dog, and he's got basketball. And that's pretty much, that's going to be the focus. And in this case, I felt like the interview transitioned once I started to ask him actually about his job and basketball and the things he does. Because we forget so much when we talk to these athletes. We ask them a lot of questions that aren't about their job, you know, that are – and a lot of the times they sound stupid in their responses, because it's impossible to sound smart to stupid questions. It's almost like if we got some sort of Nobel Prize-winning physicist or scientist, and we were saying – so how did it feel to get the prize? And do you feel like you got a lot of momentum with the lab right now? The lab's really coming along. And do you feel, you know, do you want to beat out that other scientist? You know, we don't ask them about anything they're actually doing. So I've found that once you ask them about the technical aspects of their job, stuff that might be boring to a lot of readers, I have no idea, they tend to light up and they get more lucid and they get more confident.
And if you get them that confident, it makes sense. I mean, at the risk of restating it, quote, I knew I could be one of the best two guards in the league. Were you surprised that he came back with that kind of confidence?
I wasn't surprised. If he said definitively that I could be the best, I think I would have been surprised. I've seen some of that progression, though. I've seen that with him. It seems what's interesting about Clay is that he derives a lot of that confidence from his father, who's a totally different kind of personality. His father is life of the party, constant, just talkative.
He's got a radio, he's got a radio show, right, in L.A.
He's got a radio show, and he conducts himself like a man with a radio show, if you ever talk to him.
Yeah.
Just brimming with confidence. And with most athletes, they're incredibly confident from an early age. That's their best weapon. We project this idea that they choke. I don't think many athletes choke. They've got a confidence that borders on delusional.
Sure.
Compared to how we think about things. Just think about Steph, by the way. Think of how Steph looked in college, and then think about how he looked in middle school and high school.
Yeah.
He looked that way, and he looked at himself, and if you ask him, he says he just never had a doubt that he'd make the NBA. Now, it worked out, so therefore he was correct, and he had foresight, but that's also a delusional level of confidence that many athletes have. Clay's a bit different in that he was asked, I think by one of the kids, one of these kids should be a reporter. They ask better questions than I do. One of the kids there.
Now I'm jealous of the kids, too.
What was that?
I said, now I'm jealous of those kids too, but I didn't mean to cut you off. Go ahead, man.
They're getting toys too, man. I mean, yeah, these kids. Yeah, one of the kids asked him, when did you think you would become an NBA player? And when did you think it could happen? And he said age 21. You almost never hear that dealing with NBA guys. Huh. So I think it's been a coming out of his shell process where he's almost been drawing off his father's confidence and his father talking him up and telling him that you're going to become this. You've got a $100 million jump shot, is what his dad said. And he's starting to believe it. So he's almost a late bloomer with the athletic confidence, and that's quite interesting to me. I know I've said interesting a billion times, but yes, that's quite interesting.
Do you agree with it? Do you believe it? I mean, where do you think this guy ranks in the league? And I don't mean, you know, what shooting guard he is. I don't care about by position. I mean overall in the league. Top 20 player, top 10 player, top 50. Where does he rank now?
Off the top of my head, I'd probably go around that 20 spot, top 20. But the thing about him is, with his work ethic and his commitment, he keeps adding things. It's just unusual for somebody to add as much as he's added just this season. And so maybe the old regime with all the fighting, the internecine fighting and the coaching staff, that withheld some of his development. So maybe this year is just uncommonly vast as far as the improvement goes. But I think of him less as just a finished product and where do I rank him, and more as somebody whose potential I'm quite excited about.
Well, I think a lot of his growth, and I think the same thing applies to Curry, is that both of them were so underrated for so long that they've had to work so hard and always be picking up and adding new things to their game that it's just in their DNA at this point. And you're seeing that now with them constantly improving.
Yeah, it's funny that sometimes your greatest strengths are derived from earlier weaknesses, and you get really good at something because you weren't considered to be that good at it. Hey, you can see it on a micro level where what's the best thing that Curry does defensively? Well, up until this season, it was probably post-defense because you know that's what everybody is trying to do to him based on what he looks like. So you build certain skills based on your deprivations. I'm thinking back to the Dan Carlin hardcore history podcast. He was talking about the Mongols and how they had these amazing horse armies and did these things, these tricks with horses that you would never see replicated in modern life because, you know, we just have better technology than that, so we don't do it. So having a dearth of something can help you paradoxically.
If I had a dollar for every time I almost made a Mongol reference when talking about basketball, you know, I mean, that's an obvious reference. Let me throw a new back and forth you guys had, because I love this one as well. Question. You guys haven't had a lot of time to put stuff in. Steve's going to punish you this weekend, right? Answer. We'll see. We're in such a good flow right now. I thought we were going to be a good team, one of the top five teams. But, man, I didn't know how good we'd be. 22-3, 25 games in, so it's been a great surprise for us. I truly believe we're the best team in the NBA. Let me ask you, man, because I'd love your opinion on it. Where do you think this team ranks? I keep asking Scotty to tell him if he thinks they're a title contender. He thinks it's too early. We're about a third of the way in now. Are these title favorites, title contenders? Is it too early? What do you think?
I think they're a title contender, if not the favorite. You have to remember the NBA, it's not like baseball. You are what you are for the most part, about a month into the season. I know people don't like to hear that, but the results say that November's results are the most predictive of all of them, and that's because as much as we talk about a team gelling and getting chemistry and all those sportsy things we like to say, the season is a degrading process. Things get taken away from you, to use the Al Pacino speech from Any Given Sunday. So you're really combating trying to gel at the same time as you're falling apart and dealing with the wear and tear of the road. So you are at your peak form in many ways at the beginning. And considering how great they were at what we're considering the beginning, they can get to that level, and that means they're a title contender. Now, the case against them would be this. It's that teams almost never win a finals without having first gone to a conference finals.
Yeah.
So if you're playing by those rules, then that's a big hurdle and a big obstacle for them. But just based on, if you want to be reductive about it, and I'm pretty reductive, if you're top 10 both categories, I think you're a contender. And they're top 5 both categories, so yes, I think they're a contender.
Well, and now the Warriors, they played the Thunder this past week, and you wrote a follow-up article on that game talking about how winning is its own reward, and now the Warriors could be looking at playing the Thunder in the playoffs. and that being sort of a scary thing to look ahead to, what teams out there really scare you as far as Warriors facing them in the playoffs?
That's a good question, but I want to go back to the last one, because I just realized this is why you guys wanted the audio. To go behind the scenes, you wanted the audio from the interview, and I couldn't provide it.
I wasn't going to bring that up.
I know. And I'm sorry, because this would have been funny. There are some things in print that read a certain way that are different audio-wise, and one of those was Clay saying, "We're in such a good flow right now." That just sounds like we're in such a good flow right now, but really, to me, in my mind, that was the peak Clay Thompson quote, because the way it was delivered was just, he was yawning as he said it while stretching. He was just, "Oh, we're in such a great flow right now." So funny. As something that was said as opposed to something that was written. Now, to get back to your question about teams that would scare you, even though they're struggling, when Kawhi Leonard comes back, the Spurs are the scariest team. They've got Green to deal with Curry. They've got Kawhi to deal with Clay for those reasons alone.
And they've got Popovich to deal with Kerr, right?
And Popovich to deal with Kerr. He made him. So that to me, should they wind up a lower seed, and you just have to hope that they get knocked out before they play the Warriors. And then other than that, I know people are afraid of Memphis, and Memphis is kind of scary, and the Thunder are just kind of scary, but I would still pick the Warriors to win both those series. And they might lose, but I wouldn't hesitate to pick them.
Well, I loved Steph's counter to this whole question. He's like, look, if we're going to win the championship, we're eventually going to have to go through the best team in the West. So if it happens in the first round, then fine, it'll happen in the first round.
Yeah, I don't agree with him on
that.
That's
a great counter. You better believe there are people in the Warriors organization praying it doesn't happen.
Exactly. I mean, what? And this is an old-school defeated Warriors fan take, but what a Warrior-y thing to do, to have this amazing team fly through with the league's best record and then have to face the damn Spurs in the first round. You know, I mean, we'll see how it ultimately plays out. Hopefully that won't come to fruition. Let me ask you a follow-up, though, because I was trying to think of it while you're answering that last question. You hit the nail on the head. I'm afraid that the whole rule of you got to get there before you can win it will apply to the Warriors. Is there anyone on this team who's actually made it to the finals? I guess not, huh? I mean, outside of Kerr, is there one player who has any kind of championship experience?
I think Barbosa might have gone to a conference finals with Phoenix, but apart from that, yeah.
I guess not, huh?
On the coaching staff. More on the coaching staff. I think I don't know if Jaren Collins was in a finals, but Luke Walton certainly was, and so was Kerr.
Oh, there you go. Okay.
You know, and
so they do have people to tell them what to expect, but maybe not from the actual player thing.
They don't have that experience.
Let me take us in a different but related direction. Last night saw the return of Bogut, a guy who most people will say is probably the key cog to any championship hopes we have. He looked good, 15 minutes, 4 points, 8 boards, 0 injuries, which is the only thing we cared about. What I wanted to ask you is, if this was up to you, if Kerr came up and said, "Ethan, how would you handle Bogut from here on out?" What would be your answer? You know, would you limit his minutes?
Just to make you jealous, Kerr does that all the time.
Yeah, see, and they probably speak to those kids at that toy store too.
Yeah. Is this, what's your opinion? You know, how would you deal with it? And then I give my orders and they're carried out. It's great. I love the work environment this season. I think the way they were dealing with him before, you can't be too careful. If you're too careful, then you're getting him out of rhythm and maybe he gets hurt that way. Avoid back-to-backs, get him in under 30 minutes, handle him essentially the way Duncan's handled, and just hope for the best.
Would you sit him out the occasional game? I mean, because that's what Pop does with Duncan, right? I mean, whatever,
reason. Sit him out the occasional game, yes.
Well, how about last night when they had the game wrapped up and they put Bogut back in? I mean, would you do that
are just trying to get his wind up. They're probably trying to get him in good condition, because you do have to do that. That's also very important. And so that's my best guess on it as to why they put him back in, but maybe I should have asked about it.
If Kerr does ask you again, would you raise a third option of just wrapping him in bubble wrap until we actually get to the playoffs and then unwrap him there? I mean, it's what Scotty was saying actually really concerned me last night. And of course you're right. Of course it makes sense, but
here's the thing. He would be so out of rhythm, and he would just, there would need to be a process of getting him back. So I wouldn't want to do that. But if you could do the Han Solo thing where he's just frozen, and what was that called again, that material?
I should know. I am that geeky, and I'm probably just, you know, coming up short right now because of the pressure on me. By the end of the show, I'll try to come up with it. Carbonite?
Well, we'll get our crack staff on it. We'll get
carbonite.
Our crack
staff. Boom, it's carbonite.
Carbonite.
Boom.
Carbonite. If we could carbonite Bogut, and if I had a nickel for every time I heard that phrase, if we could carbonite Andrew Bogut, so he's not out of rhythm, and he's not out of shape, and his timing is just completely in sync and on, then yes, I would I'd like for that option, but we haven't created carbonite as I know it in real life as of yet, so I would urge against it.
You know, if we listen really closely, we can hear the sounds of thousands of people slowly turning this podcast off because they now think that we're losers. But, you know, who cares?
Yeah.
It is
carbonite. We've really reached
what kind of person do it? Like, I love listening to my NBA podcast, but this is geeky.
This is so geeky. All right, here's another random trade I want to run by. I had an argument with a friend about this the other night. He was suggesting that we trade Harrison Barnes and Leandro Barbosa for Greg Monroe, not because Harrison isn't an asset and not because Leandro is not getting any time, but because of Bogut's fragility. You know, it would be nice to have a legitimate backup coming off the bench. One, do you think that trade is viable? Would you make it? And two, if not, are there any viable backup centers out there that we can target?
Man, I'd have to look at the money and I'd have to look at how it's all going to line up. It seems as though you could get Harrison for cheaper with an extension than you would for Greg Monroe. I don't know that for certain, but that's just off the top of my head, and yeah, that would have a certain benefit to it. I like the logic of it. I just don't think it's going to happen because Joe Lacob loves Harrison Barnes. He's a big Harrison Barnes fan. So I would put the expectation on Harrison Barnes returning.
Do you believe in Harrison again? What I mean, you know, he had the big putback slam last night that was being called Jordan-esque.
Harrison doesn't believe in me. That's my issue. Man, it's too bad because he's such a nice guy, by all accounts, good kid, works hard, but I don't think he's ever going to forgive me for some of the stuff I wrote about him during that stretch last season. I don't know what I was supposed to do, but at the same time, there were extenuating circumstances. He wasn't being used correctly. This season, he's being used correctly. And how big a believer am I in him? I think he's really good in this role. I don't think he's necessarily going to become what people envisioned for him at UNC, but he looks like he's on his way to being an excellent 3-and-D guy, and Ron Adams has done wonders with his defense. So I enjoy watching him play. I don't know that I see him as a future max guy, but I see him as a future good role player.
You strike me as a socially perceptive guy. Here's why I'm saying that. How early can you tell that you may have pissed somebody off with a piece? I mean, is it like a look that they give you? Is it an answer that they hit you with? What's your first tip off on that?
Well, Harrison blocked me on Twitter, and I don't think I've ever tweeted at him. So that should let you know.
Yeah, there you go. It probably doesn't take too many superpowers to pick that up. Fair enough.
No, it doesn't take a lot. And there's just a clipped way. And some guys, if they don't like it too, if they don't like it, they're just going to tell you about it. And that's fine. That's cool.
Who's giving you a bunch of shit before, like verbally?
Yeah, exactly. So
No. Who's done it? Who's done it to you?
I'm not going to divulge that. But it does happen from time to time.
You're being politically correct on it.
And you got Scotty to swear, so this is definitely a subject.
I'll put it this way. Some people don't give me a lot of leeway.
Yeah, all right, fair enough. Anybody who can't pick that up should stop listening right now. They probably didn't like the carbonate jokes. Let me ask you about another guy, and this kind of fits into the whole category of delusional confidence. Justin Holliday's rise in the NBA over the last couple of weeks have been unbelievable to me. This is a guy I didn't think was going to make the squad. Then I didn't think he was going to get off the bench. Then I thought that his time above Leandro Barbosa was going to be short-lived, and he's proven me wrong at every stage. You believe in him? Is this guy a legit rotation?
I hope so. I'm rooting for it unabashedly just because he's a nice guy. Like dealing with him, and I know that doesn't count for anybody. People just want the basketball, but to me, that's where the true drama lives, right? Mm-hmm. Hey, if Steph Curry has a bad game or a bad stretch of games, he's still Steph Curry. Not that big a deal. Maybe we complain, but if Justin Holliday has a bad stretch of games, he's out of the league and maybe forever. So that, to me, is where a lot of drama exists, where every time he shoots, my eyeballs are on the television screen, yeah, and I'm hoping that he can get this together. And defensively, he just has excellent talent, moves very well, can change directions really well. He probably has a few things to learn on that end. And for him, it's just going to be about making that three-pointer. I don't think if we're scouting him looking backwards in his career that he's the greatest guy around the rim, but if he just knocks down open threes and plays excellent defense, he'll carve out a role, and I'm optimistic that he'll be able to do it.
It is very true, the drama that's involved in it, because anytime he makes like a turnover, I'm like immediately looking over at Kerr. Is he going to put somebody else in? And
yeah.
To me, watching him, it's a lot like the rise of Kent Bazemore, where I was just rooting so strongly for him to succeed. And I mean, hopefully he does not end like Bazemore did.
And it's hard not to associate with those guys. And I'm not sure why, because I'll never have any kind of a chance to come off the bench. But when they go in and succeed, it's almost like it's one of us. You know, it's a guy you thought would never have a chance.
And frankly, those guys are also just more real as people because they don't have the demands on them that are placed on superstars and on famous people. They're more like regular people. They literally are. When the media comes in to deal with these guys, to deal with the team, you'll see the scrum go in a few different directions, and they're maybe even half of a basketball team, nobody talks to them. Like, barely anybody talks to Sean Livingston, who's pretty good and has a role in this team. So they're going about their life in a way where they're not famous, and they're not treated like a famous person, and it's just easier. It's easier to have a lot of regular conversations with those guys, and it's easier when you watch them to think of them as regular people. And I'll say to Justin's credit, he was by far the last guy out of practice today working on that jump shot. So he's certainly working hard for this goal that now it seems like he can realize.
Let me take us to a less feel-good story, at least from my perspective. Maybe you can talk me out of it. How good do you think Andre Iguodala is? Here's why I'm asking. I loved him, I loved him when we were playing in Denver. We won the series, but Iguodala killed us. I was so fired up to have him come over here when they made the trade. And from what I can tell, he's made a visible regression. He's still a big part of the team, but he's nowhere near the killer that he was in Denver. But we're still hearing huge praise from certainly from the coaching staff and from opposing coaches. Am I missing something? You know, do you think this guy's taking a step back, or am I just not looking in the right place?
Oh, he has. He's still there defensively. As far as his instincts are excellent, his talking, his communication, that team has benefited. Draymond Green has benefited a lot just from Iguodala teaching him, and that's been very important. But around the rim, he's just missing some layups that you don't understand, and he's also avoiding layups that you don't understand. And yes, that's how the decline happens. I don't think we often think about decline the wrong way. I feel like we say he lost it or he's washed up, and that's not something that happens one day. You know, that's something that happens incrementally. So I believe we're seeing an increment of that with the worst finishing this season. But he's still a player who brings a lot of value to a basketball team. We just don't know for how much longer.
And would David Lee fall in this camp? I mean, to me, since coming back, it's kind of been.
You mean push shot Jesus? Is that what you're talking about?
It's weird that he didn't use that. Yeah, that's exactly what we're talking about, man.
Yeah. I mean, yeah. Of course. Well, David, I mean, he keeps getting hurt, so it's hard to know how that factors in for him. I'm not sure why the three-pointer has yet to become part of his arsenal. Maybe it's because it's that kind of low line driving release point, and that's the reason. He's another guy that there's a lot of praise for in the coaching staff. I do think that defensively he's doing better this season.
Yeah.
He's moving his feet well. He's getting blocks. So he's improved on that end. But what was that?
Because Scola killed him in the first half last night.
Scola did get him. But he was doing better in the games before that. But Scola indeed did get him. That's a sharp decline as far as his role on the team too, right? Because he was coming in as the starter at the beginning, and suddenly he goes down, then Draymond Green just wrenches the starting spot away, and that guy, once you start playing him, you can't stop playing him. And then there's Mo Spates out of nowhere. So yes, he's really fallen from the plans, and it will be interesting going forward to see what happens with him.
I had a thought on Lee last night. I thought it was kind of ironic. There's a chance he has the most important role he's ever had on a team this year, and it's going to be as a reserve in way less minutes. You know, and I wonder how he's handling that mentally. I mean, he's saying all the right things, and I'm sure that Kerr will be able to smooth it over, but it's kind of interesting it went that way. All right, let me ask you, this is kind of more – rapid fire, but I'm getting perhaps overly fired up about this team. I want to see if you can objectively back me down. From what I can tell, Steph is an MVP candidate. Draymond is a most improved candidate. Kerr is a Coach of the Year candidate, and Spates is a six-man candidate. Let me take those quickly. Steph, MVP. One, is he a candidate? Two, do you think he'll do it?
He's the leader. Probably take the field just because anything can happen, but he should be the favorite. I don't know if he is. I've heard a lot of Harden and Frank. I'm not with that.
Yeah.
I'm just not with it. I don't like this thing where because Dwight got hurt and Harden had to deal with the misfortune of Dwight being hurt, that I should ignore that the Warriors are a lot better and that plus-minus-wise, Steph's way out ahead of him. Real plus-minus, he's ahead of him. Just by a lot of the stats that I like to look at, he's leading. So I'm just not with that. Yeah, Harden's been great, to be sure, but I'm not with the idea that he deserves it. I think Steph should be in the lead, and I think he's going to get it. I think he will get it.
All right, Draymond, most improved. I think we can definitely agree that he deserves to be there. Will he get it?
No, I don't think he does. Don't think he does. I think this is more or less who he's been, and he's a little bit better this season. He just happens to play more minutes. I think Klay Thompson has improved, has done more to improve than Draymond Green.
You know,
but I do think that Draymond Green will be a candidate just because when you get more minutes, it's interpreted as improvement.
If only there was an article out there that showed all the new moves that Klay had came up with. We'd be so lucky. All right, let me switch to the next one. Kerr, Coach of the Year. What do you think?
There's some good coaching jobs out there that people are doing. Budenholzer in Atlanta. That's fairly impressive.
Yep.
Man, who else would it be outside of that? You'd have Atlanta. That's who it's going to be, right? It's going to be Popovich disciples, Budenholzer, and Kerr, most likely.
What about Randy Whitman?
Probably goes to Kerr because he's just more famous.
I really hope you're right. Good job ignoring Scott's Washington take there. Here's our last one on the board. Spates, six-man candidate. Is this a joke or is this legit?
It's legit. It's legit, but you'd have to bet against it just because we usually give that to a guard. We like scoring guard. That's our archetypal sixth man in our heads. That's what a lot of this stuff is about. It's, do you resemble the type of player I'm used to? And so I'm going to fit you into that box. We want microwave score. We want a Jamal Crawford type. So it's probably going to be somebody like that. That'd be my best guess.
Two last questions, neither of which Warrior related, but I want your opinion on them. First one is a sports etiquette question. I went to a game last week, maybe it was a couple weeks ago. I forget what the hell game it was. Sit down. I got there a little late, so this is on me. It's, I think, maybe 5 minutes into the game. Looked down to put my beer into the cup holder and realized that the person to my right had screwed it up. So now all the cup holders are off, and the person sitting next to me is using mine. What's the move there, Ethan? Do I tell the guy to get his shit out? Do I just put it on the ground and just deal with it? How do you deal with the cup holder catastrophe?
Yes. Well, how drunk is this guy that you're dealing with?
Good question. I couldn't, I can't fight at all, but I could take him, and he wasn't drunk at all.
Okay, well, if he's not drunk, you can just explain it in a friendly way with a smile and saying, hey, dude, this way, that make it seem like you're letting him on a really good idea, as opposed to the kind of a corrective, as opposed to, dude, can you, hey, I think this is a good idea. Maybe we should do this and shift it so everybody can get it there. Yeah, thanks, bro.
Oh, man,
that's how you pitch it. If he's drunk, though, stay away. It's just going to fall on deaf ears. He's going to get confused. He's going to think that you said something about his girlfriend, or you're looking at his girlfriend. You're going to get a black eye.
All right. I think you're absolutely right. So basically, try to take the attitude like we are in a old-timey badass toy store and hope that he picks up the feel of that.
Exactly.
All right. Here's my last one for you. I don't know if you had a chance to – something tells me you're probably not sitting on the edge of your seat listening to every one of our podcasts. So I want to play you a clip that we got from Kirk Lacob. We asked him about the possibility of you guys playing basketball against one another, and here's what he had to say.
Ethan actually played with me this summer. I don't know if he mentioned that, but we brought him, a bunch of NBA people and a couple writers we played. We run a bunch of games during Vegas Summer League.
Huh.
Probably 20 people. So he played a couple games. So he's been on the same floor as me.
Okay.
If he wants the one-on-one matchup, I told him, bring your shoes and your clothes one day after practice and we'll go. We'll see what happens. I mean, I don't want to be too cocky, but I don't think Ethan's getting that shot off. I don't think he's scoring.
Yeah, do you think it's say you played 11, is it 11-0?
It depends when I want to end the game. Yeah, I don't think he's scoring on. Maybe he'll get lucky, throw up some sort of sky hook or something. But maybe I'll feel bad. I don't know.
It's unfortunate this isn't a video podcast because in addition to dropping that line perfectly, as he did it, Kirk slowly shook his head like it was just ridiculous that this was even out there. What do you think, Ethan? That's pretty inflammatory. 11-0 depends on when I'm in the game.
He doesn't tell. He doesn't tell you anything about how he played in these games, which I thought was very selective. Where I think we had the same point total, which is that we both scored once. He got me in transition. He got me with a transition layup, but it's all fuzzy. It's all hazy.
You did score on him, though.
I like the confidence from Kirk. Yeah. I don't know really what to expect because it was just – this was a weird game. It was at Summer League. There were scouts from other teams. You know who played on my team, by the way? As crazy as this sounds, I've told the story probably elsewhere, but Mo Spates was on my team for the second game.
Is he a sports writer?
He shot us out of the game. This is one of the reasons why I did not see Mo Spates this season coming, this fantastic Sixth Man of the Year campaign, because I just thought of him as somebody where we always think with NBA players, like, dude, if you saw an NBA player on the court, you know, in real life, you would understand how truly great they are. We have Mo Spates. He doesn't care because he's not playing with NBA players, and he's just taking bad shots and missing. And so that informed my idea of maybe how the season was going to go, and that was incorrect. But that's totally off topic. On topic, I don't think it would go that way, but I don't see what I have to gain from being cocky about it. You want to lower expectations. You want to under-promise and over-deliver. So, I guess I hope to score a point. That's the approach I'm going to go with.
Well, we're going to put together some kind of a pay-per-view, and it would be stupid for me not to say this. I love the idea that Mo Spates wanders into a game with sports writers who presumably are all much shorter than him. And even then, even when he is the obvious go-to post presence, he's still firing up 15 to 18 footers. You know, you cannot take that man away from his game. Ethan, thank you so much, man. Phenomenal job. It is always so much fun having you on. That was certainly true today. We really appreciate it.
Thanks for having me, man. It's a lot of fun.
Please remember, you guys, if you're looking for us on Twitter, we can be found at Warriors Huddle. Our email is warriorshuddle@gmail.com. We're still found on iTunes, where we'd love your vote. Get on there. Give us 5 stars, please. Even if you hate the podcast, we'd appreciate it. And our website remains warriorsworld.net, where our video can be found mainly because of the amazing work of our interns, Sumit and Jeff, who have just been killing it. Thanks for listening, you guys. Hopefully we'll see you next week.
Good.
Step into the world of power, loyalty, and luck.
I'm gonna make him an offer he can't refuse.
With family, cannolis, and spins mean everything.
Now, you wanna get mixed up in the family business.
Introducing The Godfather at ChumbaCasino.com. Test your luck in the shadowy world of The Godfather slot.
Someday, I will call upon you to do a service for me.
Play The Godfather, now at ChumbaCasino.com.
Welcome to the family.
VGW Group, no purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions, 18+.